Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting from Atlanta, Georgia, this is The Bright Side with Technisha.
A daily broadcast on real life issues that will keep you motivated.
And now, here's your host, Technisha.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm glad we're tuning in with another episode of Bright Side with Technisha. And today is February 19th, 2014. And on air, I have Dr. Vincent Felagiri. Did I say it correctly?
Yes.
I'm missing it. Felagiri. I'm messing it up again. I try to make sure I always get someone's name correct. And he is a licensed psychologist who has authored the book, Fat Control, The Next Equation, which addresses obesity, which has become a serious health problem today, Vincent. And Vincent, can you give us some more detail what it is that you're actually trying to do or what it is that you do?
Well, I've written a book, as you indicated, to address a very chronic epidemic. Actually, it's a pandemic of obesity and overweight situations where people present themselves at risk for serious yes. health problems. So I felt a need to use my experience and knowledge and research in the field to assist people to get to safe weight and safe fat levels so that they can be healthy.
Now, you people who walk around, they don't even think they're overweight. They don't see themselves as that. But then most people who do watch TV, they seem to see all the actresses who are slim, the models that are slim. So what do you tell those who area very discouraged by a weight goal that can be only gained by obsessive dieting and exercise?
Well, it's very interesting because at one time in history, if a person was overweight or obese, they were considered wealthy and well-to-do. And then the pendulum changed the other way, where if you were extremely thin, almost anorexic, if you will, they tended to be looked at as very healthy and beautiful. So it is a cultural thing, and it's a product of the times. However, I will say that given the fact that coronary artery disease is number one killer in the United States and cancer is number two, being obese or overweight are risk factors for those two major diseases. So a person may, in fact, want to be thin, very thin, because there's societal pressure to do that. But in the long term, their health is at risk, as evidenced by much research on the subject.
Sure. Now, in your book, you mentioned there appears to be a genetic component to fat gain. What are those components?
Oh, there certainly are medical components to it.
Okay.
And when one looks at one's food intake, see, basically I don't like to use the word diet because it's not a diet that we're talking about here for change. We're talking about lifestyle choices and lifestyle changes.
Yes.
But what we have is a situation where depending on the kinds of foods that one takes in, they could be adding to a high degree of sodium in their intake. They could be adding a high degree of saturated fats. They could be adding a high degree of sugar. So those are things that present themselves as risk for people's health when we talk about health in general. There's been much research that the kind of cholesterol and the amount of cholesterol that you have is directly related to coronary artery disease. So depending on the kinds of foods that you eat, it could add to your getting the bad cholesterol. And, of course, depending on the kinds of food you eat and the kinds of exercise that you do, you could be adding to your good cholesterol. So there are two types of cholesterol that are important in helping one be healthy. So
okay.
This is something that people need to know about.
And that's what your book addresses, as well as telling you the myths and the beliefs that we think about food and exercise, right?
Absolutely. You know, in other words, in order for this particular lifestyle change to take place, one needs to address the three important elements for this solution or equation, and that's N for nutrition, E for exercise, and T for thinking. All three of these components are equally important in order to maintain long-term weight loss or fat loss. Many of the diet programs that are out there, and I don't have to tell you or your listening audience how many there are many of them, they're successful only short term because they emphasize one aspect as opposed to the others. They may emphasize high carbohydrates, they might emphasize high proteins, they may emphasize high fats, but they don't talk about balance.
And then what gets me, you can lose about 10 pounds within a week. I mean, they're encouraging you to get yourself, and it don't actually work like that because everybody's body type is different, too.
That's right. You see, that's a very good point that you mentioned because many of these programs that are out there tend to stress very quick weight loss, very rapid weight loss. That in itself poses health risks. In order for weight loss to be successful and safe, it needs to be done gradually and over time. But unfortunately, in our society, we're looking for changes that happened yesterday and want quick results. Those types of quick results are not sustaining. They will boomerang because the body is geared that way. It's meant to fight and reject and restrict any kind of major change to itself.
Okay.
And it will fight, and the body will win, because it is not used to and doesn't accept rapid weight changes like that.
Okay, sure. I do understand that. Now, in raising children from babyhood, what food verbal messages do you recommend or not recommend for babies and toddlers?
I'm sorry, would you please repeat that?
Yes, sir, I sure will. In raising children from babyhood, what food and verbal messages do you recommend or not recommend for babies and toddlers?
Well, obesity and weight problems originate from the very early years of life. Parents can serve as role models, and being role models, they need to show their children proper eating habits, proper food choices, proper exercising, and, of course, the most also equally important is the proper thinking, which I'll mention in a moment. There is a genetic basis to obesity. There's no question about it. But genetics is not the full picture. In other words, biology is not destiny. And there are environmental factors that are involved here where people do have control. People have control of their lifestyle choices to determine their future health. You see, whatever we do to our bodies today will determine where we will be tomorrow. Now, a lot of people do give up and they don't feel that they can do certain things. They may have a pessimistic attitude toward life or success. But I'd like them to remember one thing. There was a person who they might remember by the name of Abraham Lincoln.
Okay.
Now, this individual was born poor. He was defeated in 8 elections. He failed at 2 business attempts. He suffered a nervous breakdown. and he was elected the 16th president of the United States. So,
wow.
Yeah, there was failure and multiple failures in his life. You know, it's a question of, yes, if you have failed at doing something, you need to now pick yourself up and start again. And parents have a tremendous influence on their children in selecting the foods and the kinds of behavior that children should model. As far as healthy foods are concerned, what I have done in my book is present lists of healthy vegetables, fruits, legumes, nuts, whole grains, herbs and spices, and drinks and snacks that people can have that would be helpful in their weight fat loss goals. In addition to that, there are certain foods that tend to be, and I'll use a fancy word now and explain it, thermogenic, meaning that by eating those foods, they in themselves will burn calories. For example, almonds, apples, cauliflower, eggplant, lemons, onions, oranges, strawberries. These are just a few of the thermogenic foods that by eating them, they will help a person burn calories just by the nature of those foods, or the content of those foods. As far as behavior is concerned, doing regular exercise and there are various types of exercise and the effects that it can do will increase one's metabolic rate, and the metabolic rate will decrease fat. So these are things that parents can do that their children could model. The third aspect is thinking. The thinking aspect is crucial because the thinking that a person has a direct relationship on what they do. And if their thinking is negative, well, the behavior will be affected accordingly. I'd like to just give you and your listening audience an important quote from Buddha. He said, "What we think we become, all that we are is the result of what we have thought." So thinking is such a crucial part of this equation for success that I stress it in my book and give numerous examples of how we tend to sabotage ourselves on a day-to-day basis so that we may not be successful. But I also present examples of how we can defeat that type of thinking and be successful in the long term. On a day-to-day basis, we need to address these thoughts that we have. And many times we don't recognize them unless we actually stop and start listening to what we're saying to ourselves on a daily basis.
Well, that is, and I find that to be so very true, too.
You know, in 1972,
yes,
there was a cartoon character by the name of Pogo. And you know what he said? He said this.
No.
He said, "We have met the enemy, and
okay,
it is us." In other words, we are our worst enemies. We are our worst enemies. We tend to defeat ourselves, and many times we don't even know that.
And that, yeah, I grew up with that statement too. Only you can stop yourself from doing something. Nobody can really actually stop you.
That's right. So if we can examine our thinking and, so to speak, analyze what we're saying to ourselves and change that negative kind of thinking to positive type of thinking, our behavior will show itself in that way, in a positive way. And that has to do with success in weight loss and fat loss.
And I did like what you said in your book about Franklin stated, "He who dares nothing need hope for nothing. We become what we are thinking and feeling." And I took that on. If you don't want to exercise, then you won't lose weight. If you don't want to eat right, then your high cholesterol won't go down or your high blood pressure.
Right.
And you do start becoming, you start feeling lazy, sloppy,
yep,
all that. And it affects you mentally. That's why a lot of people be grouchy because of what we eat.
Right. And in addition to that, not only is our psychological aspect affected in that way, but our physiological, our medical condition changes as well. In other words, a person may actually make worse an existing medical condition that they have, possibly diabetes, or some sort of joint pain, arthritis, or they can actually initiate a new medical condition as a result of not following a healthy lifestyle choice program. So we have here an interaction of both the mind and the body all the time.
Yeah, sure. I do agree with that, every bit of this. So true. But are there any health conditions that can't be controlled by diet, exercise, or modifying one's thoughts?
Well, what we do know from much research is about two-thirds of the population in the United States are overweight. And that kind of condition is related to a host of problems, which can be minimized. It's related to cancer, of all different types of cancer. It's related to high blood pressure, diabetes, osteoarthritis. It also is related to high triglycerides, high cholesterol, coronary artery disease, asthma, bronchitis, atherosclerosis, stroke. It goes on and on and on. Because a person is carrying excess fat, and again, I stress fat, not weight, because weight is not the issue. It's fat. Mm-hmm. If a person carries excessive fat, they are putting themselves in danger of all of these health conditions that I've mentioned and more.
Okay.
The mere fact that a person is overweight, they're increasing their chance of death. The greater the amount the person is overweight, the greater their mortality rate. A person who's 35% over their ideal body weight, and there are ways in which that is calculated, and I can explain that if you like, how I would work with someone in that regard. But if a person is 35% overweight, their risk of dying increases to 141%.
Okay.
So the higher the weight, the greater the risk.
And even for a small person, you could still be overweight, too. You could be obese. Because I'm like, I think I'm 137. But after hearing the news report on Good Morning America, they was mentioning that you could be overweight and you could be slim. And that's why I look at people, you don't know who's healthy and who's really not. Because you might see people that look thicker than you, doesn't mean they're not healthy.
That's exactly correct. And one of the things that I discuss in my book is that the ideal weight that a person, the desirable weight that a person should have, it is just a number. And what I'd like to do in working with individuals who have this type of a problem, and what I've done in my practice in helping patients with this, is that one of the things that I tend to prefer is the 1959 Metropolitan Height and Weight Tables. Metropolitan Life Insurance Company, they put out tables back from the 1940s all the way up almost to the present, where they gave ideal body weights based on height and body frame. And they give a range of weights. Why I like this particular year table is because it tends to be at the lower end of the body weights. All the succeeding tables as they went to the present day got higher and higher in body weights. I tended to prefer the lesser one, which is the 1959. And I use this as a measure or a guide to help individuals get a sense of where they can be. It's not by all means perfect, but it's a guide to help you where you need to be. Not one weight, but a range of weights is the more reasonable, understandable thing that person should aim for. But that in itself is not the answer. That is not the answer. What is the answer, or part of the complete answer, is that a person needs to look at other things. In other words, body weight is only one thing. You need to look at what I call the waist-hip ratio, That is the amount of distance, if you take a tape measure and measure your waist versus your hip.
Okay.
The greater the waist is higher than the hip. That poses very serious risk factors, cardiovascular problems, heart attack, coronary artery disease, stroke to individuals. So there are ratio. This ratio, if it's the more that waist is greater than the hip, which is an indication of fat, the greater risk that poses to individuals. That to me is very, very important because a person's weight could be normal. In other words, they could be within that normal range of the 1959 table, but if their waist is greater than their risk, and there are ratios that show which ones are more or less at risk, the higher that ratio is, the greater the risk for that individual, given normal weight. So we want to take into consideration their waist-hip ratio. We want to take into consideration also, which I've written about, is something called the body mass index. That is simply a formula that measures overall fatness.
Mm-hmm.
That gives you some idea of where a person falls into either healthy weight or overweight or obese categories. But again, even if the BMI, body mass index, is within the average range or healthy range, if their fat ratio or their waist-hip ratio is high, they're still at risk. They're still at risk. So what I want to stress here is that fat ratio is so crucial because it poses so many health risks to individuals for so many different diseases.
Wow.
Including the most two primary ones, coronary arteries and cancer, directly related to obesity and being overweight.
Oh, have to be careful what we eat. You know, I love what you already had mentioned about that you put all these different vitamins in your book. And I do love the fact that with each vitamin, you're telling what sources are good for these vitamins.
That's right. You see, people need education. They need to understand, one, which foods are healthy and which foods tend to be less healthy. But they also need to know that vitamins, which are part of foods, have their particular roles, and they do have functions that are very, very, very important for the functioning of the human body. And what I do is I outline in the book which vitamins, which are in foods, are water-soluble, meaning they dissolve in water, they don't remain in the body for any significant amount of time, and they need to be replaced. So I indicate, you know, all of the B vitamins would fall into that. So what I have done is indicate specifically what the B vitamins are, and I provided examples of what those are, the food sources of where you can get those vitamins, and those food sources that I've indicated are healthy food sources. And for many of those B vitamins and other vitamins in general, they are helpful in losing weight. And losing fat weight specifically, because that is really what we're interested in, not losing total weight so per se, but losing fat weight. So I talk about the different B vitamins, or they call B complex vitamins. I indicate the fat-soluble vitamins, which you have to be careful about because excessive amounts of those actually remain in the body tissue, and that can be toxic. So that would include vitamins A, D, E, and K. So those are important elements, and also they are involved in weight loss as well, fat loss. And I also go on to mention the various minerals. The four most important minerals in our body are calcium, phosphorus, potassium, and magnesium. But I mention all the others, and as well as give examples of what food sources they can come from, as well as what conditions they're useful in working with. They are important for various kinds of conditions. So I outline all of that information for the vitamins and minerals, indicating their sources as well as their uses. And then after that, I present various food groups that people can take to make healthy food choices. I give examples of luncheons. I provide 9 luncheons of where they can select from to have healthy luncheons, as well as 9 healthy dinners, and 46 snacks and side dishes that they can have throughout the day, all in the idea of losing fat and maintaining healthy lifestyle choices.
Now, Vincent, was there ever a time you used to be overweight?
The only time that I was what we would consider maybe overweight was when my mother told me when I was a little child, maybe 2 to 3 years of age, that I tended to be on the chubby side. And I saw pictures of myself along that, and I was a pretty chubby kid at that point. But throughout life, there have been times when I've put on some additional weight that I know would not, or fat, that I felt that would be not helpful to me. And I needed to redo my efforts to be able to get back on track. It is something that one needs to address on a day-to-day basis.
Oh, okay. Now, in your opinion, Vincent, do any herbal supplements really help you lose weight?
Yes.
Okay.
There are various herbal supplements,
mm-hmm.
Or herbs that one could make use of that would in fact be, again, I use the fancy term, thermogenic, which means burn calories. That's what you want the body to do. You want the body to burn calories. One of them would be cayenne pepper. Cayenne pepper has substances in it that helps increase the metabolic rate, which is what you want to burn calories. If you burn calories, you'll burn fat. So you may want to consider that. Ginger is another one. And garlic would be certainly a third one that I would recommend. And the last one that I would recommend is turmeric. T-U-R-M-E-R-I-C.
I was going to say, I try to get a lot of my vitamins mostly by mixing up different. Well, it was a green smoothie challenge that I was part of, and what I would do, I would mix up vegetables like kale, put in banana, and soy milk, and that's really tasteful and helpful.
Absolutely. So those I have found, those particular herbs are helpful in increasing one's metabolic rate, but also making healthy food choices. And there are those that tend to be healthy and those that tend to be not healthy. For example, we know in our research that certain saturated fats in general tend to be very unhealthy, where they increase one's cholesterol, one's blood sugar and body fat. They would include the coconut oil, palm kernel oil, palm oil. So these are saturated fats, and saturated fats only add bad cholesterol to your blood vessels. And that's something that people should minimize at all costs. So, but a lot of people think that if they have very little carbs or a lot of carbs or too little fats or too many fats, and the same thing for proteins, that they're going to be able to lose weight. It doesn't work that way. What happens here is that if you have excess of these things, if you have too many carbs, if you have too many proteins, or you have too many fats, and many of these diet plans that are out there today do stress one of these to a higher level than others, the body will fight it. The body will resist it. The body will fight it. And as a result, after maybe 2 weeks or a month, the weight you lost will be regained gradually. So you don't want to have excess of any of those things in your intake. What you do want is you want to have some degree of balance and moderation. This way, and it has to be done gradually for the body to accept it. And if the body does accept it, the chance of success long term is greater.
Okay. Now, this I would love to discuss about the thinking factor that you mentioned in chapter 4 of your book.
Yes.
You said that's the important factor in the net equation.
Well, you're talking about thinking, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, the thinking part of it is the third important ingredient of this equation. And what we think we become. And what we need to understand is we need to be able to closely monitor what we say to ourselves on a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm.
An important person many, many, many years ago said the following: men are disturbed not by things, but by the view which they take of them. In other words, it is our interpretation of events, whatever they might be, not the event itself, that determines our emotional response. So how we interpret the things in our environment and the things that are happening to us and the things we do or things we see has a bearing on what we do and how we react. So what I'd like to do and what I have done in my book is present individuals, readers, with a model that they could use to help achieve their ideal goal weight, ideal body fat weight.
Okay.
What we want to challenge are irrational, unproductive, disturbing ideas. We want to challenge those. And what we want to replace them with are rational, productive, non-disturbing ideas or thoughts. And what I enumerated in the book is the model that was presented by a famous psychologist by the name of Albert Ellis. And he developed a school of thought known as rational emotive behavior therapy. And just to give you and your listening audience an example of how this model works, it's the ABCDE model. And the A stands for an activating event. In other words, it could be an experience, it could be a situation or a thought just prior to a person feeling or behaving in a specific way. Example, there's a social event. And at that social event, there are high-calorie foods.
Yes.
So that's the event. The A, or the activating event, will lead to a B, which is beliefs. And for people who are having challenges with their weight, these beliefs could be irrational. And if they're irrational, well, they need to be changed to rational ones. So an example of a belief, an irrational belief, that a person could have at this particular setting of high-calorie foods is the person says to themselves, I cannot stand not eating at this event. It would be awful if I don't eat as much food as others do. So this is the belief that the individual has given to themselves, which is irrational. The third part of this rational emotive therapy is C, consequences. In other words, what's going to happen as a result? Well,
okay.
As a result of this, the person can feel depressed, guilty, they can be anger, they can feel hopeless, they can feel sad. So that's the consequence of that thinking. And D is where the person can do something, they can be in control, and they can D, which is dispute it. They can dispute and challenge that irrational thought by example. The person can say to themselves, where is the evidence that it would be awful if I don't eat as much food as others do? In reality, there is no evidence. So the person might say, it may be uncomfortable or unpleasant not to eat, but it's not awful. So that's the disputing part of it. And finally, the fifth part of it is the E, which is an effective new rational belief. The person who's then challenged that irrational belief to a more rational belief, the E becomes, it is annoying to go to a social event or gathering and not eat as other people do. But it isn't awful, nor is it very difficult, or intolerable. So this is just one example of how people can take control of their lives, do something by analyzing and looking at their thoughts and their thinking of how it's affecting the behavior.
Now, Vincent, to work, do you think yoga is an effective weight loss technique?
Yes. Yoga tends to be a very good choice, among others, to be able to reduce your central nervous system activity, in other words, calm yourself down, and reduce the cortisol levels in your body, which when you do have high cortisol levels, they tend to increase body fat, and you want to be able to do that. And it actually helps tone your muscles and provide a certain degree of flexibility. So, yes, so yoga would be one of the other things that I would recommend as part of a total plan of nutrition, exercise, and thinking that would be certainly helpful in that regard.
Okay.
I would also recommend deep muscle relaxation, where a person relaxes their body from head to toe.
Okay. Yeah, because I do a lot of yoga. It works. It's so wonderful. I do, because I do P90X, so I love doing that.
Absolutely.
Now, I was reading about your behavior modification techniques about drinking water before each meal. But if you drink water or any low-calorie beverage before a meal, will it help to lose weight more slowly, thus keeping the pounds off?
Well, it depends on what you drink. If one drinks sugary drinks, then no, or diet drinks, that would not be beneficial because it would be non-thermogenic. If you want to have something that's thermogenic, my suggestion would be to drink plain water, or maybe put a little lemon in it before, during, and after a meal. And it should be drunk slowly.
Okay, sure.
And one of the recommendations that I tend to feel are important is people have asked me, how much water should I drink? Well, one of the suggestions that I give is that whatever your body weight is, divide it in half.
Okay.
So if a person weighs 150 pounds, I would say 60 to 75 ounces a day. Because what happens is water is a diuretic. And because it's a diuretic, it's going to be thermogenic. It's going to help the person in their weight loss goals. So that is one of the behavior modifications that they can use in achieving where they want to go. And what I've listed, and you've mentioned behavior modification techniques, I've listed 64 of them. Simple. Some of them are common sense that people could follow on a day-to-day basis to do what they need to do. That's just one. Drinking water before, during, and after.
And as Tony Horton said, when he was creating P90X, working out with a person is a great way to get it actually going.
Well, by doing that, they're facilitating what the body needs. And it's a simple change. It's a simple change, but it's going to complement everything else that they're doing if they follow that lifestyle change in general. I also indicate that how they eat, how rapidly they eat, has a bearing on what's going to happen to the body. It takes about 20 minutes for the brain to register what you've eaten. So if you're gulping down your food, it's not going to affect it. It's not going to help the individual. The hormones need to be secreted, and those messages need to go to the brain for them to register what has taken place. So there's got to be a minimum of 20 minutes from the time they start eating to the time they end. So that's another important aspect in my behavior modification plan that people need to understand. Also using a small plate. If they have a large plate, there's a greater chance of them putting more food on it. They use a smaller plate and even divide the food on that plate. They lessen their chance of having a greater amount of food or even all the food on that plate.
I was going to say, then you mentioned discard all unused food, and then at a restaurant, take home all uneaten food.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because you said discard all unused food, but what if you don't finish all your food at the restaurant? Should you just leave it there as unfinished?
Well, if you take a doggy bag home, and you use it for another meal, that's fine, you know, maybe the next day or so. But if a person feels that they have met, they follow their plan, and again, planning is so important. If they follow their plan and they don't want to have more than maybe what's been served, there's nothing wrong with taking it home and having it at a later time. What is concerned to me are the foods that a person has in their home that are not healthy. So one of the behavior modification techniques that I recommend is to discard, replace anything in your home that's not healthy with things that are healthy. When it's out of your sight, it's going to be out of your mind. So if it's not going to be physically there for you, you'll be less tempted to want to take it and have it. And if you have healthy foods there, you'll be more inclined to have what you have available for yourself. Another aspect is sleep.
Oh, yes, because it's hard for me to get. It's hard. I work, then I have my twin girls. I try to work. I try to keep a planned schedule, but it's hard sometimes to get 7 to 8 hours of sleep.
Right.
Easy for them to get it, but hard for me.
And a lot of other people. A lot of other people have a similar type situation. Because when you're dealing with less sleep, the body doesn't have the repair time to be able to do what it needs to do to help not just in burning fat, because that happens while you're asleep as well, but also helping your other body organs work optimally. So too much sleep, 10, 11 hours, is also detrimental to one's health. And too little sleep, like 3 or 4 hours, also detrimental. So the idea is to be able to get at least 7 to 8 hours, and understandable that it's not possible on every day, but if there's possibility on other days to be able to catch up on the sleep that's lost, I believe that should be something to aim for. Because sleep is such an important part.
It is. That's why I sit, because my job has me working 6 days straight. So I said when I get my off day, I'm making up for the time that I have lost on sleep. I'm relaxing all the way so nobody disturbs me.
Yes. And the body will allow you to do that. The body will allow you to make up for the sleep that you've lost. And that will be restorative. And that's what you want to do. It's people who are in a chronic situation where they have very, very few hours a day of sleep, and that happens every day for months, that kind of chronic condition will in fact hurt them in their health long term. But if they can adjust that periodically by catching up to what they lost,
mm-hmm.
it will be beneficial to do that.
Now, what advice do you have for overweight people confined to wheelchairs?
Well, again, people are in control of their health and their weight. That's my basic premise. People are in control. If an individual is wheelchair bound, that doesn't mean that they cannot get involved in some form of exercise that would be appropriate for their particular disability. You know, depending on what they're in the wheelchair for, what kind of condition they have, they would consult with an exercise physiologist or a physical therapist of what exercises they can do that would be considered safe given their medical condition. So to me, there is certainly an opportunity for people who are wheelchair-bound to be able to exercise in some manner, form, or shape to help themselves.
Okay.
But it needs to be done under the supervision and consultation of someone who understands their condition and their limitations. That's very, very important.
Now, Vincent, at times when I do work out, I sometimes like to indulge in a little brownie snacks or a cookie or something like that, and I really feel bad about it. So what is your advice for someone like me?
Well, that's a very good question. Again, someone who has worked out and someone who has, eaten the right foods, sometimes may feel a need to indulge in something. Well, once in a while, a person going off track is not the end of the world. It's okay. Again, we have to deal with thinking here. The thinking that the person might have if they go off track, even for that one time or one day or one situation, is the one where a person is giving themselves permission to go off track. However, that same idea of going off track could also be applied to having them understand that, yeah, I'll go off track today, but that doesn't mean I'm going to go off track permanently, and that I can go back to where I was in deciding to select healthy foods that I have been all along. So that's fine. I have found in working in both in practice and through my research that if you put too many restrictions on people, that they can't do this, they can't do that, the more restrictions they have, the greater the chances for failure. You need to have some degree of latitude. You need to have some degree of flexibility. And people need to understand that they can have that and what they need to do if they should deviate from what they've been following as a healthy plan or healthy pattern or healthy path. So to me, that there's room for modification and a new room for some change.
Okay.
Now, but again,
go ahead, Ben.
It needs to be one needs to understand their rational thinking, because if that thought of going off to have maybe one brownie or two brownies now once, and they say, well, maybe I could try it again and again and again, and then that becomes the thinking of that individual, then what they're doing is they're circumventing the rational thinking that they've had before, and they're going back to a pattern that won't be healthy. So it's being able to understand where they're going, where they've been, and where they can go as a result of their behavior at any given moment in time.
Now we have women that may have had a new baby. You have a lot to think about. You got to feed them. You got to know what to do when she cries and all that comes about after you had the baby. But what plan do you recommend for a woman who just gave birth or maybe any advice while she's pregnant too, so she don't have to worry about the gaining weight?
Well, it's quite evident that individuals, when they're pregnant, and even post-pregnancy, do gain weight. And a lot has to do with hormonal changes that are occurring before and then after pregnancy. However, given those hormonal changes that take place, again, doesn't preclude the fact that they will stay that way after the baby is born. Again, if they were of healthy weight, healthy body fat weight before pregnancy, and then they found themselves in a situation where they were in a range of unhealthy body fat weight after pregnancy, they would need to have start their regimen over again to where maybe it was before, and work at getting to a point where they would be as they were prior to the pregnancy. So, again, it's something that they have to work for. There are going to be peaks and valleys. There are going to be times when people are going to find themselves where they need to make adjustments. But that's okay. That's what life is all about, being able to adjust and being able to deal with one's environment in a constructive way, being flexible as opposed to being inflexible. So if they do that, they can get back on track to where they want to be.
Now, doing my research, they said breastfeeding really helped to shave the pounds off. But from my experience, breastfeeding made me hungry. So what points do you have for avoiding that weight gain? So,
well, first of all, research has found that breastfeeding happens to be a very positive experience for the newborn.
Okay.
It actually provides a high degree of high level of antibodies in helping to increase the newborn's immune system. As far as individuals who are breastfeeding, again, we're dealing with a situation where there are biological changes taking place. Hormones are being secreted as a result of the breastfeeding, and they may, in fact, lead to certain kinds of behavior that would be less helpful than before. Again, it's a simple principle. You need to examine what you're doing, why you're doing it, examine it, and find ways to replace it. Because that kind of thinking will only add to more thinking. And if it's negative, it's just add to more negative thinking and more negative behavior. So this is an example of an event that can jeopardize, not always, but it can jeopardize one's wishes of what they may have had prior to breastfeeding. It's an event that requires adjustments in their life going forward. And that's what life is all about, making those adjustments as they come along.
Okay.
Any number of things in life that can set a stage for a challenge. And they're challenges. That's how I see them. They're challenges. And the person can deal with those challenges on a one-to-one basis, one case at a time. But if they have the tools to be able to work with, they should be equipped to deal with them as they come by without feeling defeated or weak, failure. You know, that's what we don't want. We want people to see them as challenges. We want to have them see them as something that they can be the master of, that they can be successful in. And it all starts with knowledge and knowing how one's thinking affects this kind of behavior.
Now, when it comes to diabetics, you know, I was reading there are like several factors at work to lead you to believe that insulin is to blame for your weight gain. Jensen, do you believe that? And if so, what advice do you give to diabetics?
Well, that's a very, very interesting question. First of all, I want to say that diabetics, the dietetic plans that are given to diabetics are actually quite healthy for people in general who even are not diabetics. So to me, the diabetic plans that are offered are extremely useful. Sugar in itself is a very powerful, addictive type of drug. I actually put it in the same classification as alcohol and drugs in general. It's very addictive and very, very, very dangerous for one's health. Studies have shown that increased sugar intake is related to cancer.
Absolutely.
Related to decreased immunity, aging, and, of course, fat storage. So someone who's diabetic is watching their intake. But I believe that all of us need to watch our intake. And if we can eliminate or minimize sugar, period, in our intake, it would help us. So to me, sugar should be minimized as much as possible, as well as sodium and saturated fats.
Ah, Boy, it's something. I mean, you just have to be careful what you eat. And I used to watch the Murray Show and watch how the parents would actually feed their children every time they cry. They would just give them food. And when they come on the show, they're wobbling. They're over 20 or 30 pounds overweight. And, oh, you feeling, actually feeling sorry for the children while the parents think, oh, that's so cute. That's my baby. And I'm like, no, you're going to end up giving that child high cholesterol, high blood pressure.
That's right. And I'll tell you what we've seen, and this is more than ever before. What we're seeing now more than ever before is younger and younger children, and I'm talking about 5-6 years of age, showing medical conditions that were only present for adults. In other words, we're starting to see diabetes now more and more. We're seeing high blood pressure. We're seeing asthma. We're seeing joint problems, depression, anxiety. We're seeing them at very young ages now, more so than before. Well, there's a reason for that. The reason is the amount of sugar they're taking in has increased.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they go to one of the fast food places. They eat all of the sugary drinks. They drink the sugary drinks and the foods that they eat with the high saturated fats. And
I want them to put eyes on it.
No,
I don't want that candy and all that junk food.
Yeah, all these processed foods that once they sell in the stores, and the lack of physical exercise, they could be playing video games for 5-6 hours or watching TV.
Yeah.
When you're dealing with a double it, you're dealing with a two-pronged thing here. You're dealing with greater sugar intake. You're dealing with greater saturated fat intake. And you're dealing with less physical exercise. Therefore, these medical conditions come up, and they're starting very young. Believe it or not, what they're saying now is that the children of today, if they don't have an intervention early in life, may actually live less than their parents in their lifetime.
They do. Yep. They're not as active as we were growing up.
That's right.
And my daughters won't work out with me, so what I'm going to start doing is letting them play the Wii, because since they don't like the P90X, and I thought they'd like hip-hop apps, but they don't like that one either, so I just start letting them use the Wii, because you're working out and don't know that you're working out, but you're still playing too, so.
You know, that's so great. It's terrific that you do that, and I encourage that to parents to do that. And a lot of people don't understand, and this is something that I've also indicated in my book, is that there is something called NEAT, N-E-A-T. And it's a fancy acronym for non-exercise activity thermogenesis. That simply means that when we do things in our day-to-day life, whether it be sweeping the floor, walking up the steps, anything like that, doesn't include eating, sleeping, or sports activity, we actually can increase our metabolic rate, and that will burn fat.
Okay.
So what research has found is that if you can increase that NEAT factor, you will increase your metabolic rate and lose weight and lose body fat weight. Mowing the lawn, maybe walking a greater distance when you park your car at a mall rather than parking right near where the store is.
Yes.
Vacuuming, shoveling snow, washing one's car. These are all activities that add cumulatively to increasing one's metabolic rate, which will burn fat. That's what you want.
Yes.
Even brushing your teeth for 2 minutes can burn calories.
And Vincent, since we're getting short on our time, because they're telling me I only have so many seconds, is there a website you can go to find out more information?
At this time, I don't. However, if someone wanted to find out information that I discussed with you today, they can certainly go to one of the booksellers like Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And my book has information that I've presented, as well as charts, 11 different charts that they can use to help monitor their behavior, their exercise, and their thinking to help them to where they would like to go in their pursuit of their weight loss goals.
Okay. Well, thank you, Vincent, for passing on this information to us. And Yes, I hope that you take heed to this and make sure you grab Vincent's book at Amazon or Kindle, Nuke, whichever one you prefer. And Vincent, thank you again, and you have a blessed one.
Well, I want to thank you very much for having me on your show. It was a pleasure speaking to you.
Thank you.
Okay, bye now.
Bye-bye. And tomorrow guest coming up will be James Martinez. He will be talking about Once Upon a Transcendent in the Realm. So tune in tomorrow at 12 o'clock. And you have a blessing.
Thank you for tuning in to The Bright Side with Tanisha.
Come back daily from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern.
God bless.